In Your Doorway, written by Technically Very Cowboy and read by Sunkitten Shash. An Only Friends fanfiction, rated explicit. Summary. "Wait, please," Top says too quickly. Do you have a free evening this week?"
"For you? Why?"
Top exhales sharply. Boston wonders if Top has ducked into a bathroom or onto the patio to have this conversation. Wouldn't want Mew overhearing, of course. Talking to your sort of ex certainly isn't good husband behavior.
"I have something to ask you, but I'd rather do it in person," Top says.
15 years later, Top gets a hall pass, and Boston puts his ghosts to bed. Important note, I am recording this entire podfic with a cat on my lap. So not the ideal recording setup, but like, there's a cat on my lap, and he's like doing biscuits and purring, so I don't have the heart to move him, you know? Boston doesn't answer the phone when Top calls. Not deliberately. He's not 22 and fixated on a hookup just because he'd let Boston bottom without getting weird about it. Boston doesn't hear his phone buzz because he's on his back with a thickly muscled semi-regular balls deep inside him while Nick sucks his cock like it's the last chance he'll ever have. Once everyone's gotten a chance to come, the three of them lounge in bed for a bit, catching up. This regular has been on their rotation for a couple years, popping up in Bangkok every few months on business. The first time, Nick had picked him out because his solidity suggested real strength over decorative musculature, and every now and then Boston likes being pinned in place. Eventually, Boston and the regular go for a second round in the shower. Boston falls to his knees to eat him out. The regular doesn't come again, because he's got at least 5 years on Boston's 36, but it's fun anyway. Boston shows him out with a bottle of water, a dirty kiss, and farewell until next time. He feels good as hell as he climbs back into bed, loose and languid. Nick is warm and post-orgasm pliant, with a little spatter of cum on his cheek. He hums and rolls toward Boston, pushing his face into Boston's chest and hiking a knee over Boston's thigh. Boston trails his fingers over Nick's hip.
"They're gonna have rancid morning breath if you don't brush your teeth," Boston says.
Nick grumbles.
"I'm comfortable."
"It was that good?"
"Yes." Boston snorts a laugh. Nick may not have started honest, but he's become so over the last decade and change. Once, drunk and particularly confessional, Nick told Boston that the tape thing was the first time a lie ever doubled back on him, with consequences that he couldn't live with. "I told Sand that I didn't have to be your favorite, but you couldn't hate me." Only then does Boston snag his phone off the bedside table and see that he has a couple emails, a couple messages, and one missed call from Top the Domesticated Whore. He can't remember the last time he talked to Top. After that last miserable New Year's, Boston had blocked them all in every way he could think of. Even after he'd come back to Thailand and unexpectedly found Nick, he'd kept his distance. He knew fragments. Ray and Sand were on again, off again, in rehab and out. Top and Mew got their big, tacky fairy tale wedding after marriage equality passed. Ray and Mew's and Nick and Sand's friendships mostly endured, and it was through them that they all sporadically came together. At first, Boston had enjoyed watching the lives of the people who threw being a slut in his face crumble, while he and Nick figured their shit out and built something that was good and solid and made them happy. Eventually, it got old. Boston doesn't hate them anymore because he doesn't really think about them. He can't imagine living a life where he peaked at 22. "Top called me," Boston says. Nick cracks open an eye, unimpressed. He was gonna ground him for a month if he finds out. Boston laughs. Mew and Top are very, very happy in public. The last time Boston can remember seeing them together, they'd kept a solid 6 inches of space between them and had not looked at each other the entire night. It was the second worst birthday party Boston had ever attended. He'd actually felt a little bad for Sand.
"You think they're getting divorced?"
"I think Mew would kill him first," Nick says. "Couldn't live with the shame."
"True."
Boston drums his fingers against Nick's hip. "I'll call him back tomorrow." He tosses his phone back on the nightstand, turns off the light, and settles into bed with Nick. Boston does almost forget to call Top back. He wakes up to a couple frantic emails about a last-minute need to reschedule a magazine shoot with this year's annoying hottest rising star. He's never loved print shoots. Most actors, musicians, and famous-for-no-reason-but-a-pretty-face people don't know how to model to save their lives. The money's good, though, so he sends back a handful of alternate dates. He's leaving for the States in 2 days, to New Orleans, to do some album cover and promo stuff for a singer he likes. Her little indie label hadn't scraped together nearly enough to cover his fees, but he's not immune to the odd magnanimous urge when he thinks someone can get on his level. It's a minor trip, but he still has a dozen questions from his assistant that need to be answered. Once he's dealt with all that shit, it's midday, and Boston's mildly irritated. Nick sets a bowl of noodles in front of him and kisses him hard. Boston growls into Nick's mouth and fists a hand in his hair until Nick drops bonelessly into his lap. "Food will get cold before I do," Nick murmurs. "It'll reheat." "Do you really want to risk getting a hunger migraine halfway through?" Nick asks, poking a finger into his stomach. "I don't know that I trust your stamina your age." Boston bites his shoulder and says, "Asshole," but loosens his hold and allows Nick to stand and walk away. Nick's work just finished up a film and haven't yet started the preliminary creative phase for the next project, so he's in a lull that means he's only going into the office a couple days a week. At least one or two of those days is solely to get fucked across Dan's desk. They're in the sweet spot where Boston likes having Nick around all day, walking around in his boxers and available anytime Boston wants him. If it goes on too long, they'll start grating against each other, but they've gotten good at timing. After lunch, Boston opens Nick up with his tongue until tears leak from the corners of Nick's eyes, then pushes Nick's knees back to his chest and fucks him slow and languorous. He rolls out of bed long enough to find a camera and spends the afterglow photographing Nick, the bent spread of his knees, the curve of his softening cock along his hip, the curl of his hair around the shell of his ear, the satisfied slant of his mouth, and half-lidded eyes, tear tracks drying on his cheeks. That night, Nick goes out drinking with Sand and a couple other friends, and Boston relaxes into the quiet emptiness of their place. He orders takeout and eats it straight from the carton sprawled on the couch. There's some action movie on the TV, but it's background noise rather than entertainment as he scrolls through his phone. He likes pictures Sand posts of him and Nick laughing together, tucked into a dim corner booth. Boston doesn't get Sand's appeal. He's a musician who can't sing, and really doesn't seem to like people watching him, but he's apparently been there for Nick. That makes him useful to Boston rather than likable, but Nick doesn't have to justify his taste in friends. Seeing Sand reminds Boston of Top the Domesticated Whore. Boston thumbs over to his missed calls and looks at Top's name, shoved 6 places down the recent list over the course of the day. It's not hesitation, exactly, that makes him pause. Top doesn't have the power to be a truly bad decision, and hasn't for a long time. Still, Boston mulls over the question of why he wants to call back at all. There's curiosity, of course. Boston has no doubt that Mew and Top should get divorced, and he also thinks Nick is right about the likelihood of that. Still, Boston and Top were never friends who chatted. They didn't shoot the shit or catch each other up. They didn't care about each other as people. Their compatibility was beautifully cock-based. Boston can admit to some smugness, too. 22-year-old Boston would look at 36-year-old Boston's life with approval, maybe a smidge of bafflement at the whole long-term partner thing. 22-year-old Top would look at his future and curl his lip up in that unimpressed little sneer that used to make Ray lose his shit. It's the memory of that pissy little face that makes Boston tap Top's name. He can picture that Top so clearly, in his tucked-in polo shirts and slacks, like he was 22 going on 45. Mew eroded away so much of the sharpness Boston liked about Top in the first year. It's been a lot longer than that. It rings once, twice, 3 times. No way in hell is Boston going to leave a voicemail, so he moves to end it just as the line connects.
Boston?
Top. Top sounds like Top, but a version run through a noise filter to amp up the grittiness. He's a little rough around the edges, like his phone woke him up from sleep. Boston hopes he hasn't become the kind of person who goes to bed with warm milk at 7:30. That's a hell of a fall, even for someone who made one bad choice, and then spun out the rest of his life trying to justify that choice.
I wasn't expecting to hear from you.
Boston rolls his eyes.
You called me first. I did.
Boston is clearly meant to fill the silence that follows, so he doesn't. He's not going to chase after answers to questions he didn't ask.
Say something or I'm hanging up. Wait, please,
Top says too quickly.
Why? Do you have a free evening this week?
For you? Why? Top exhales sharply. Boston wonders if Top has ducked into a bathroom or onto the patio to have this conversation.
Wouldn't want me overhearing, of course.
Talking to your sort of ex certainly isn't good husband behavior.
I have something to ask you, but I'd rather do it in person,
Top says. It doesn't feel like a blatant lie, but there are unspoken gaps there Boston could drive a truck through. Does make him more curious, though.
We'll be in the States this week. But I could probably spare an hour the week after. Thank you,
Top says, so sincerely grateful that it makes Boston a little embarrassed for him.
Anything for a friend. Send me the details.
Boston hangs up without saying goodbye. It's a good trip, and Boston doesn't think about Top at all. The shoots go well, and the hookups he brings back to his hotel room are fun. He photographs the two that are into it for his personal collection. He leaves Nick voicemails as he jerks off and relays every filthy detail. The bar Top Picks is in a hotel that Boston is pretty sure his family owns, a choice that is either interestingly reckless or pathetically desperate. It's upscale in an unmemorable way. The decor is understated minimalism all the way down that ends up boring. It fits with Top's exterior. He was always at his most interesting with his clothes off. Boston's purposefully 10 minutes late, because he's long past waiting for Top, and it comes with the added bonus of seeing Top before Top sees him. Top's wearing an expensive and highly tailored suit, with a pocket square that matches his tie. He's got a glass tumbler of something dark in one hand, pensively swirling it like he's a character in a film contemplating how things got to this point. His shoulders are down and rolled in. Boston has been in enough bars across the world to recognize the posture of someone unable to understand how their life turned out so disappointing. It's so cliche, and so fucking funny. Top flinches as Boston sits. He still looks good. Genetics and money will do that. But there's a slightly plastic quality to him. Boston has spent enough of his life framing models in his shots to recognize a little surgical assistance. It's tasteful, if you don't mind grown men clinging to their 20s. He's wearing his wedding ring.
"You came," Top says.
"I've never understood why none of you ever believed I was going to do exactly what I said I was going to do." Top flicks his gaze from Boston's eyes to his hands.
"I didn't mean it like that."
"You did, but lucky for you, it doesn't hurt my feelings anymore." He signals the bartender for whatever Top's drinking. It's expensive, but hell if Boston's paying for this drink.
"I didn't know you had feelings," Top says.
Boston cocks his head and pins Top down with a look. "Do you really think you still know me that well?" He has no interest in chasing after Top, nor is he going to slot back into charged insults snapped back and forth at a bar under the cover of too loud music and university students. Boston doesn't fuck people who hate him. Cleaning up the mess that follows got tedious back when he was still in New York.
"No, of course not. I'm sorry."
Top doesn't sound insincere, but there's a rote quality to the words and the way they blend together.
"No, of course not. I'm sorry."
"So, Mew never did get over it." Boston sips at his drink and says nothing, while Top tries not to fidget. Top asked to meet. Top can be the one to suck it up and say what he wants to say. Boston can admit that he's curious, but he's old enough to know that people are rarely that surprising, and most of them don't change that much. This meeting is clearly illicit for Top, but Boston won't obligate himself to play along with that shit. He didn't marry Mew. He wisely didn't get married at all.
"How have you been?" Top asks.
Boston snorts a laugh. "How have I been?" Top's mouth thins into a flat line for a beat, but it doesn't last. One corner tugs up into an involuntary ghost of a smile.
"Famous photographers don't catch up."
"Am I supposed to believe you haven't been keeping tabs on me?"
"Humor me."
There's a tinge of desperation behind the request. Top's gaze finally lands solidly on Boston, and there's a tightness around his eyes that contradicts the plastic sheen. Top suddenly looks both their age and younger, like the man he's become superimposed over the boy Boston had wanted so badly. Maybe the years have changed Boston a little bit, too. Maybe he's learned to extend the smallest amount of grace. Okay. Boston sets his drink down and straightens his shoulders. Spent 10 years in New York, came back to Thailand. You know about the work I've done, and I do enjoy it and get paid well for it. Despite everyone's best efforts, Nick and I are together. Top raises an eyebrow. You're okay with that? Boston smiles with a little bit of teeth. Nick doesn't ask me to do things that I don't want to. Oh. Oh. Top reaches across the bar and just barely brushes the tips of his first and second fingers against Boston's wrist. Are you happy? I'm really fucking happy, Boston says. Are you? Top doesn't say anything. So they drink in silence. Top's thinking so intensely, Boston can hear the gears grinding. It would be funny if it wasn't so pitiable. Top had shone so brightly when Boston wanted him the most. He was like a neon light in a room, pulling focus and overshadowing anything else. His smug-as-fuck little smiles promised an incomparable night, and he'd been able to back it up. In some ways, the worst part about the fucking recording was that it cast a permanent taint over what, otherwise, was one of the best fucks Boston ever had. Top's hand on the back of his head, Top fucking up into him in the back seat. Wet dream shit turned into a nightmare. Boston finishes his glass and sets it down with a soft thunk. If you're not going to tell me what you want to say, I'm gonna leave. It's not a threat, really. It's just that the only real regret Boston has about those awful months before he left for New York was how many times he'd apologized to the people who tried to ruin his life. Seeing Top abrades against those long-heeled scars. Mew gave me a hall pass, Top says, words tripping over themselves as they stumble out of his mouth. Boston barks out a laugh that rings too loudly in the quiet bar. Color floods into Top's cheeks. His eyes roam compulsively over the room. He's clearly used to being observed, and if that isn't the worst thing Boston's ever heard. You're serious? Boston asked. Top nods. Boston shakes his head. Order me another fucking round. Aren't you curious at all? Top asks. He leans forward across the bar, propped up on an elbow, liquor loose and intent. Boston doesn't know how to answer that fucking question. He spent the better part of a year thinking about Top and Mew and every single day of his life. Woke up in New York thinking about them. Took pictures of the city thinking about them. Went to clubs and fucked in bathrooms thinking about them and how he was just proving them right. He hated himself for being a cliché. It took time and slowly meeting the right group of friends for the people he left behind in Bangkok to recede. Boston had worked hard to put the past to rest. Coming back home had taken all the courage and stubbornness Boston scraped together over 5 years. The first time he saw Nick after, he'd almost turned and run. Ghosts are too hard to shake, and Boston has never liked repeating himself. I don't see what part of your life could surprise me, Boston says finally. You got with Mew. You stayed with Mew. You married Mew. You eventually realized Mew was never going to fully forgive you. Top looks at his hands again. The wedding ring on his finger is gold and doesn't particularly suit him. You could say you told me so. I wasn't would the point of that be? Boston shakes his head. Would me saying it again make you feel better? I don't care if you feel better. Boston hasn't tried to turn himself into a nice person. Part of growing up turned out to be learning to pick his battles and taking a longer-term look at his choices. Top is so thoroughly a character belonging to his past. Boston only knows how to be nasty to him. It feels good.
You don't want to know why I called you? Top asks.
Boston leans forward and drops his voice so only Top can hear.
Top, I don't think about you.
Why did you come?
Top leans further forward.
There are so many answers to that. There's a part of Boston that has always chased after things that weren't good for him. The memory of Top's body imprinted so deeply into Boston's skin that he'll never be able to entirely shake it. Boston wants to see the details of Top's misery up close, because Boston likes being right. Top was once a kindred spirit, something shining and alive. Boston needs to know if that man still exists underneath the facade. They are all more honest than Boston is willing to be with anyone but Nick. Before he left for the bar, Nick nipped his earlobe and said, "Make him work for it. I love you."
"I wanted to see if you still existed," Boston says.
Top's mouth opens, and he says nothing.
What does that mean?
Boston is suddenly tired of the runaround.
"I'm not your second chance or your savior, Top,
so I hope that's not what you're looking for. Personally, I wouldn't trust a pass from you, and I hope you've at least thought about what happens between you two after this. But I'll give you one more night, if that's what you want."
Top shudders. "How are you like this?"
"I was exiled, and I ran with it. I guess I do owe you one thank you for that. So, what are we doing?"
The muscle in Top's jaw flexes, and his knuckles go white around the glass in his hand. "I want," he says, "I want you."
"Lead the way." Top leads him to a suite on the top floor of the building that opens with a keypad code. On first glance, it looks like a room in a 4-star hotel. Luxe, but impersonal. Quality, but minimal taste. Boston toes off his shoes and hangs up his jacket. The personalized details are unobtrusive and easy to miss. A little airplane figurine, books with creased spines on a side table, an empty bottle of plum wine on a shelf.
"Does Mio know about this place?" Boston asks.
Top huffs a muted laugh.
"Ostensibly, no."
There are so many comments Boston could make to that, and he swallows them down. He sprawls onto the overstuffed couch and fishes his phone from his pocket. He texts Nick, "Back late, much weirder than I thought," then turns on Do Not Disturb and sets it aside.
"So you know, I am going to tell Nick everything that happens tonight." "He'll want to know?"
The disbelief would be cute, if it wasn't Top. He always wants to know. Top paces restlessly around the suite's living room, straightening up things that aren't out of place, and skimming his fingers over things he doesn't mean to pick up. His nerves crackle through the air like a tangible sensation. Boston had intended to wait for Top to make the first move, but he's doubtful Top actually will. Boston knows he isn't willing to drag Top along. But, grudgingly, he can admit that Top has already done something hard
so maybe Boston can lead the way. Boston stands. Come on. The gratefulness on Top's face hits Boston with something like tenderness. Crossing the threshold into the bedroom is the permission Top was waiting for. The door closes with an audible click, and Top is kissing Boston like they never left the back seat of that old car, with teeth and tongue and frantic need. Boston makes a noise into Top's mouth, but it doesn't matter. Boston can go this speed if it's what Top wants. He's not the one with a countdown ticking away in the back of his mind, and his choices aren't the ones he has to endure. Boston shoves his hands into Top's hair and walks them back toward the bed. Top's hands run down Boston's sides and catch the waistband of his jeans. He gropes for Boston's fly and starts trying to fumble the button open, but he doesn't get anywhere. Boston laughs and bites at Top's bottom lip.
You're not a fucking virgin. Calm down. Fuck you.
The back of Boston's knees hit the edge of the bed, and he sprawls graceless onto his back. He's never fucked Top in a bed before, and it's a novel vantage point, looking up his own body to Top looming over him with his trousers tented and wild, desperate need in his eyes. Boston undoes his fly and shoves down his zipper.
What are you waiting for?
Top groans or growls. Boston can't tell and doesn't care. He feels giddy and reckless, like the present has folded back over into the past, and there's no such thing as a bad choice. It's just a question of whether or not he's going to let himself do what he wants. Top bends down and yanks Boston's jeans down his hips and thighs. He sees Boston's cock, and a needy sound punches out of his chest as his knees hit the plush carpet. Boston kicks his foot against Top's thigh as he yanks his shirt off.
Take your fucking clothes off, come on.
Top shifts back with a jolt, like he somehow managed to forget that his body is meant to be involved in this thing, too. Boston props himself up with one arm and loosely fists his cock in his other hand. Top chants, "Fuck, fuck," as he stumbles over too many buttons. Boston could help, but he doesn't want to, so he's not going to. It's an incredibly petty choice, and it feels great.
Hurry up, Boston goads him, rolling his hips up into the pressure of his hand.
Fuck you, Top repeats. Whatever fraying thread of patience he's been holding on to finally snaps. He yanks his shirt open. Boston sees a couple buttons go flying and laughs. He doesn't need the proof that Top has always wanted him just as bad as Boston wanted him, but it's still satisfying. Of all the people in the world, Boston is the one Top wants. Top's trousers come off easier. He shimmies out of them in his briefs and kicks both aside. His cock is already flushed red and hard. 15 years later, and he's still stupid gorgeous. Boston doesn't need him. The fuck does he want? There's no way this is a good choice for both of them. Not given their past, and Top's present, and Mew, and how easily the years blink away in meaninglessness. But that wasn't enough to stop them at 22. And it's not enough to stop them now. Boston shuffles back to the center of the bed.
Come here.
Top crawls up onto the bed, and doesn't resist when Boston shoves him onto his back.
Is there anything you wouldn't let me do? Boston asks.
No, Top says, smiling like there's something funny about that.
I'd do whatever you want.
Reckless. Top shakes his head.
I don't care, Ton.
If they knew each other better, and if Boston thought Top would do anything about it, Boston would say out loud that even Top probably doesn't deserve what his life has turned out to be. No one really gets how the things you do at 22 are going to come back around again and again as the years wear on. Not wanting to sleep alone, not wanting to prove yourself to be the failure everyone said you were, isn't a crime. But Boston decided a long time ago that he didn't need to be told he's the better person. It never made a difference. Instead, he crawls down the bed and settles on his stomach between Top's legs. "Did you shower today?" Top lifts his head. "Before I came here. Why?" "Pull your knees back." Top makes a bitten-off sound of shock, but hooks his hands around his knees and pulls them to his chest. Boston groans loud enough for Top to hear, and starts sucking bruises into the soft, tender flesh of Top's thighs. Top shudders hard. Boston watches his hole flex as Top's hips seek out friction that isn't there to find. Boston bites him hard, and Top gasps out, "Boston!" high and tight. "You always could have had this," Boston says. Boston ducks his head in and laves his tongue against Top's hole. Top comes unglued. The thing Boston likes most about eating ass is that so few people are prepared for what it feels like. The sensation is so fucking alien and so intense, so unlike any other kind of sex most people have had. They fall apart with no effort at all. The first time Boston did it to Nick, they spent 15 minutes sitting on the floor of the shower afterward because Nick couldn't stand. Top's shocked gasp turns into a rhythmic mm-mm-mm in time with Boston's tongue. Tension shivers through his entire body, like it's so good for him he might snap apart. His hips jerk up to meet Boston's mouth, and when Boston pushes the tip of his tongue against the ring of muscle, Top gurgles out frantic syllables that don't resolve into any words. Boston grinds his hips into the mattress and eats Top out until he feels the edge of orgasm creeping up. There's something undeniably appealing about the idea of coming all over Top's blankets and then fucking off into the night, but Boston wants more than that. He pulls off. "Fuck, Boston, fuck," Top wails. "Please, calm the fuck down. I've got you." Boston rolls off the bed and retrieves lube and a condom from the bedside table. Top watches him, panting, with dark eyes. "How do you want?" "You know you never fooled me, right?" Boston asks, climbing back between Top's legs. "I saw you weren't getting what you wanted." Boston rips open the condom and rolls it on. Top exhales shakily, curling his hands into fists in the blanket. Boston looks down at him, cock hard along his hip, skin flushed with color and damp with sweat, expression too raw. Boston doesn't have it in him to be comforting. Top closes his eyes and lets his legs fall open an invitation. "Look at me," Boston says. Top does. "Why did you pick me?" Top sighs.
"Why do you think?"
"Say it."
"Because I knew I wouldn't have to explain anything to you."
It's good enough. Boston wonders just how much Top has to explain himself and the life he's chosen. Boston pours lube into his palm and slicks up his cock and Top's hole and thighs. He's operating on instinct and 15-year-old memories. There's an element of danger in that, but neither of them have ever been the type to waste time going over the limits and the what-ifs and the can-eyes. They're alike in that way. sweetness, tenderness. It's all besides the point. There are easier ways to get that than each other. Boston lines his cock up and pushes in. Top throws his head back and lets out a groan from the pit of his stomach. He relaxes into it, like this is something the two of them have done for years. Like it's familiar and simple and easy. And then it is easy. Boston finds a steady rhythm, and Top matches him, ankles hooked together around Boston's waist. Boston bends over Top and peppers kisses and bites over his torso and chest. He's going to be covered in marks in the morning, and Boston doesn't care. He doesn't need to stake a claim. He doesn't want to claim Top at all, but he is damn well going to leave behind proof of the choice Top made. He curls a loose fist around Top's cock when Top's noises slip down to near silent gasps, and that's all it takes to send Top over the edge. Boston fucks him through it and keeps going afterward. Top curls his hands around Boston's forearms, tears running down his cheeks from how oversensitive he has to be. His heels on Boston's back still keep urging him on. Boston doesn't try to hold out. It's not that kind of thing. He comes inside Top, bent nearly in half. Boston shakes through the aftershocks, and Top pets him with a clumsy hand. They lay next to each other, and Boston drifts in a hazy place that's not quite dozing.
"You can stay the night if you want," Top says eventually.
Boston opens his eyes and looks at Top, who has rolled onto his side and is watching Boston with a shuddered expression. Boston could stay the night, is the thing. He could, and it wouldn't change anything for him, or for him and Nick. He doesn't want to. He's slightly surprised it's that simple, after everything. He could stay with Top, in Top's maybe secret suite that Mew might or might not know about. He could see how long it takes Top to work himself up to suggest that maybe this thing doesn't have to be a one-off. Boston knows that his specter has never not been one of the constants of Top and Mew's relationship. He just doesn't want to. "No, thanks," he says. "You know how I feel about staying the night." Top doesn't say anything. Nick's awake when Boston gets home an hour later, damp from a perfunctory shower. Boston doesn't know what to say about Top, so he pulls Nick into bed, strips him down, and blows him until Nick's sobbing and yanking on Boston's hair are hard enough to hurt. Boston pins Nick's hips to the bed with a forearm and doesn't let up. After 10 years, he knows how to make Nick come, and he knows how to keep Nick riding the edge of orgasm until he dissolves into need. Nick arches off the bed, hands fisted into the blankets. His thighs tighten around Boston's head, and Boston pulls off long enough to bite. Nick drops his legs open and digs his heels into the mattress. Fuck, Boston loves him like this. It took him a long time, years, to figure out what it was about Nick that made him so much. In the end, it's that fucking Nick always feels like something brand new. It's forever earth-shattering for them both. Something that sounds so stupid, but is true nonetheless. Nick starts chanting, "Please, please, please," words slurred together into one. Boston slaps his hip in wordless permission, and Nick almost bows in half as he comes. The bitterness that floods Boston's mouth tastes better than the drinks. Afterward, Boston wipes them both down and prods a boneless Nick into getting under the blankets. Boston's not a cuddler by nature, but he's a little bit of a sucker for the blissed-out version of Nick that's just come his brains out
and drifts toward Boston on instinct. Nick shoves his face into Boston's neck and hums out a soft, contented noise.
"You okay?"
Nick murmurs.
"Are you happy?"
Top asked.
"Yeah."
Boston kisses the top of Nick's head. "I'll tell you about it in the morning." The end. Thanks for listening.